Hey, kids.
You're listening to the internet's wettest podcast about video games, consoles,
and pancakes.
The SML Podcast.
What's up, everybody? This is the SML Podcast. I'm your host, Joe. It is episode 1100. That is right, 1100 of these fucking things. And here through most of them, Chris Taylor. You've been a listener since the very, very beginning. Aki is here. She has been a part of the show for way too goddamn long as well.
800-ish episodes.
Oh god. And then joining on anniversary special episodes and series finales, you could guess which one this is. Adam Rippon is back. Adam, how are you doing?
Hey, I'm doing pretty good. How you doing?
I'm doing okay. I'm still plugging away at this thing.
That's fantastic. I love it. I've never listened to it, but I've heard of it from you.
I haven't listened either. I don't like the host.
Yeah.
Yeah, ever since the other ones left. Co-host.
God.
I like Chris. He was a good one. Chris Huber.
You had to specify.
I like you too. You're here. I'm talking about past ones.
Yeah, I think we've had three Chris's on here, haven't we?
I don't know. Maybe.
Which one used Chris Pratt?
If only.
It's a me, Chris Pratt.
My soul hurts.
Adam, how have you been? It has been a hot minute, a couple of years since you've been on. What have you been up to in the past few years?
I've probably worked on 20 more video games. I ran a studio in Montana. It's the largest video game company in Montana. And all the adjacent states. So that's fun.
Are there other video game studios in Montana?
No.
Okay.
Actually, that's not true. There is one, and as far as I know, it's two brothers.
As far as we know, they can go to hell.
Yeah.
We're number one, baby.
Gotta fight them. Who are they? Yeah, let's invite them on. Yeah. Who are they?
I don't know. I don't remember their names. they do some stuff with Sony sometimes, I heard. And that's why I really don't know anything about them. We've done, since last time I was on, I think we did the PlayStation and Xbox versions of No More Heroes 3. I worked on Hogwarts Legacy for the Switch.
Nice.
Bunch of stuff. Just too many damn games to mention.
What other Switch ports did you work on? Maybe Chris played some.
Well, Melon Journey. Did you guys ever see that? It was cute as fuck. It's like a little Game Boy role-playing game for all the modern consoles. Like everything's green and melon-themed.
Pretty sure we covered that because of you.
Okay, good. Yeah.
I'm going to log in now and see.
I'm too old for this. I can't remember anything.
Well, I have good reason not to remember what's in my Switch library.
Yeah. It's like me trying to remember what's in my Xbox library. Just not happening. Not possible. Something that you showed to me recently that has caught my attention and that I passed over to Chris to check out. You put Final Fantasy on Game Boy Color out of spite, yes?
Yeah, I'm working on that right now, actually. By the way, apologies. I was trying to build a game engine and it cut me out because it like blew my CPU up to 100%. So I guess I'm not going to do that while I talk to you. yeah, a couple of years ago, I wanted to play Final Fantasy Legend 2 on Game Boy, which I had never actually played, but like I read about it in Nintendo Power when I was a kid, and I had all these weird memories just from Nintendo Power. And I started playing it. I was like, this is cool, but I wish it was in color. I wonder if I could do that. I wonder if I could colorize this thing. And then I did. And then I was like, well, if I did that, maybe I should do 3 also, because that'd be cool. And then, long story short, I ended up doing all 3 Final Fantasy Legend games and Final Fantasy Adventure and a game about a tomato called Quirk. And so I posted I sat on them for like 2 years because I thought, oh, maybe I can get in touch with somebody at Square and do something with them. And I never did. It's hard to get in touch with anybody in Japan when you're in the U.S. ended up giving up on that. And just one day I was like, you know what? I'm in a bad mood. I'm going to just put these on the internet to see if I get happy, which is a terrible idea. Don't ever put something on the internet to get happy. But it did work.
What if I put this show on the internet to be happy? Is that a bad thing?
Don't do that. Oh, Joe. No, that's a terrible idea.
Oh, damn.
Just putting them in fucking shoeboxes like you've been doing for the last 100 years. You got a basement full of jars of urine and SNL episodes.
That's what happens when you're trapped in a basement for 13 years.
Yeah. So how long have you been doing this?
Yeah, February will be 13 years. February 3rd.
Diggity damn. So, yeah, anyway, I put those out and people were happy with them. Except one dude was like, well, you didn't really do Final Fantasy for Game Boy because these are all Saga games and a Seiken Densetsu game. And that was like a needle in my mind. So one day I was like, you know what? I wonder if I could port Final Fantasy to Game Boy without the source code. It's like, it's a 256 kilobyte ROM, right? And I'm like, I can handle that much data. I'm a fucking programmer. That's like less than a picture of the box.
It is a hell of a drug. Jesus.
I started fucking with it, and now I have a fully functional version of it for Game Boy Color. It's not quite done. I haven't released it or anything, but that guy is gonna feel so stupid.
He's gonna be pissed. What's his name?
He should already
call him out.
I don't know what his name is. It's probably some dude on Reddit.
Yeah. Also, he should already feel stupid because, like, if he did any research, he would know that Seiken Densetsu is literally called Seiken Densetsu Final Fantasy Gaiden.
I know, right? But
it is Final Fantasy in Japan, too.
That asshole.
What a prick. I don't know why I felt like I had to do it, but now I know that I can do that, which is kind of cool. I'm going to try to make some money doing that with something. Obviously, Final Fantasy, cracking the Square nut, difficult. They're already on pixel remasters. There's like 2 different versions for iOS. Like, you know.
Oh, do pixel remasters.
Yeah. Well, that's, oh God, yes, please. I want to do more stuff like that. Like,
I want to play the PlayStation trilogy in like 8-bit style, not the NES port that somebody in China made, but like of 7, but like the actual, yeah, you know, actually remade to like a cared degree. That would be
Don't
amazing.
You fucking give me ideas. What are you doing?
Be nice. Those third party people in China, they need to make games too. They need to start somewhere.
I mean, it is really cool. I played that Final Fantasy 7 for NES. It's broken as hell, but like, I mean, it's rad. Like,
it's not like, I don't know. I've always had the, okay, so full disclosure, and everybody that is listening can just not listen to me. The NES Final Fantasy is my third favorite in the whole series. Mm-hmm. And while, yeah, it's got some broken elements to it, I argue that it is no more or less broken than the 5 that came after it.
I would say that's true. Yeah. I mean, I would say it's way less broken than Final Fantasy II for Famicom. But
that one's pretty wild, yeah.
Yeah, I just played all the way through that. When I was a kid, when I was like 17 or 18, I worked on the fan translation of that 3.
Oh, that's awesome.
And I realized that I had never actually played Final Fantasy II for Famicom in English or Japanese all the way through. And like, years ago when they found the actual prototype cartridge of the American translation, the English translation of Final Fantasy, Frank Cifaldi called me up and he was like, hey, can you confirm that this isn't your work? And so like, I was the expert brought in to like confirm its authenticity, and I hadn't played it. not all the way through. I played like the first, 10 hours, which is like 5 hours of getting yourself up, and then you go to Finn. I played through that on my analog pocket. I tell you, that game fucking sucks. It is so not fun. You get to like 30 hours into it, and you're just beating your own dudes up in a dungeon trying to get your stats up, and it's just, oh. Why?
So I have a little bit of a story that's somewhat similar to that, but with a happy ending. Mm-hmm. So actually, if this is the version I'm thinking of, I probably first played Final Fantasy II through your translation, because similar age, I really liked it because it was like Final Fantasy I, but I didn't really get it. And then I played the Game Boy Advance version, and that's where I read on the internet that you're supposed to like beat your own guys up and get god stats and then breeze through the game. And I didn't like that either. I stopped at the Black Mask Cave. And many, many years later, in fact, only 2 or 3 years ago, I was like, you know what? I always rank FF2 at the bottom of my list. I was like, yeah, this one's the bad one. And then like 3 years ago or so, I was like, there's a new translation for it. Not new, but like there's one that's like more recent, and I'd like to check it out. So I'm just going to go ahead and play this game. I was like, I wonder, what if I just didn't punch my guys in the face? What if I just didn't do anything the internet suggested and just played it as if it were just my first time playing? And when I did that, it was so fun. And then I went back and played through the Game Boy Advance version and had even more fun and played through the extra content there. I played through the Pixel Remaster version. Actually, the Pixel Remaster version was first. Famicom, then Pixel Remaster, then GBA. Then I went back and beat the Famicom version yet again. And it's now at least in the upper middle of my favorites. Because I roundly ignored what the internet has ever said about it, and ever since then, I've been kind of a unpopular defender of that one.
Hey, so I took a shit on it just now, but I do think it is a pretty cool game. Like, it's just
you can hate it; that's fine. I just I'm just saying I had a happy ending with it eventually, but I had the same experience you had at first.
Yeah. It's just such a slog sometimes. Like, that's what drove me crazy. And I was playing it while I was doing other stuff. So I'm just sitting there kind of button mashing. And Final Fantasy III for the Famicom is in my top 4 Final Fantasies.
Nice. I actually recently beat the Famicom version of that one, just this year.
Yeah, I did right now, 2.
Nice.
I'm on 5 now. I'm doing a in order playthrough.
Nice. I too am doing that, and I too am on 5.
Yeah. 5 is my favorite in the whole series. I think 4 and 6 have great stories. And we don't have to talk about Final Fantasy all night, but I got no problem doing
could. That. I have a problem with that.
Final Fantasy 5 to me is the most fun game in the series. The job system in it is so good. I have such a good time just like leveling dudes up, getting their stats where I want them. Like, I love that game. And I can play it in English. Story is just like, and Evil Tree is mad at you. Go get him. And like, I can read that level of Japanese. No problem. Yeah, it's and the music is so different from the rest of the game. It's like, I love it. But I'm a sucker for the job system. I love 3 and I love 5 for that.
Nice. I really love 5. I recently, it took beating 5 4 times for me to like it. And it's the same reason as 2, is that I was trying to do too much. I was trying to get too much into God mode before actually engaging with the game's challenges. Mm-hmm. And I never really learned like the cooler parts of it, which I had to learn in future Final Fantasies, which would be like my favorites are like the Beastmaster capture function, Blue Mage, and I love Geomancers, and really love Chemist. I'm like wild about Chemist. So it's like now I play through like with those, and I don't really work on the other jobs at all, like or if I am gonna work on a job, I pick a maximum of 3 jobs per character that I'll even engage with, and that made it so much better for me.
I have done some of the weird jobs in past playthroughs, but I've been trying to focus more on them this time. Like Blue Magic, I always end up skipping, but Chemist, I will play with a chemist. I will make it work.
Chemist is so good, but yeah, you need to like you need to like, it's not just knowing what does what, but you need to like know what enemies drop the 3 special items that make Chemist like OP. And so it is a little bit of a grind, but it's something that you can do in conjunction with your job level grinding that you might be doing anyway, so it's really cool to engage with. But yeah, I really found a lot of cool stuff about that, and actually I really like the story. I find it's a refreshing romp more than dramatic soap opera of a thing.
Yeah, I like the description of it. I heard one time the Giving Tree gets mad at an old man, and something like that. Anyway, it's I agree with you completely. It's just like, it's fun. It's lighthearted. It doesn't take itself all that seriously. And I love Final Fantasy VI. I love Final Fantasy IV. Those are my second and third favorite games, and I don't know which order those are in, but like,
six is my first favorite and it always will be. There's no shifting that.
Yeah. But it is so serious compared to 5 and even 4. Four, five, and 6 in that order is like perfect for me, because you get like serious but not super dark, and then just goofy, and then try playing Final Fantasy 6 in Japanese when you've been studying it for a while, and it's just like words about governments and taxes and empires, and like I'm just, oh, this is hard. As long as I'm finishing up my thoughts on the Final Fantasy series, I gotta give a shout out to I don't actually know how to pronounce his name, Nazir Gabelli, who did the programming for the first
Nasir?
3. Nasir, yeah,
I think it's Nasir Gabelli.
Yeah, sounds right.
Probably. I mean, well, you would know better than I would, but I will say he is the person who intentionally nerfed the Ultima spell in Final Fantasy II so that it's not good. He did it on purpose against instruction.
Oh, interesting.
Philosophically, he didn't think that that the player should have anything that's OP in the game.
Mm.
And yet he gives you the blood sword that can kill the final boss in like 2 moves.
And I did.
Yes.
Yeah.
Only on the Pixel Remaster version, because I forgot to get the blood sword and it's a missable. Did I actually fight the final boss without it? And I lived, I survived, but yeah, thanks to my like leveling up holy, and Ultima, actually, funny enough. But yeah, it was like that sword really trivializes that fight.
Well, when you spend months turning a guy's assembly code into C, you really learn a lot about the guy. So he's a hell of a programmer. It feels like we spent a summer on the beach together.
That's awesome. I love to hear that.
So do you guys want to talk about something besides Final Fantasy? Or do you want me to do all ROMs for Game Boy?
You know,
I'm a Final Fantasy VI guy myself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I did want to say that so I did get the I was going to play the Final Fantasy Game Boy Color port on my Analog Pocket, but I have been stuck in a loop of trying to update the Pocket's firmware since yesterday, so I actually haven't even gotten to load it on yet.
Oh, no.
So my apologies. I will check it out, and we'll let you know, because, again, I adore the NES Final Fantasy, so I would love to play the GBC port of it.
I broke my stinking Analog Pocket while I was working on it. I walked across my office, and I guess I built up a static charge or something, and I picked it up, and there was just a zap, and it zapped me so hard that my thumb hurt after that, and it was right on the D-pad, and now whenever I touch the D-pad, the screen goes wonky, and I want to get it fixed or even just buy another one, but you freaking can't. Analog, never freaking sells Analog Pockets. Website always sold out.
I can tell you why I'm mad at them right now.
3D colors?
Yeah. The same week that I got my black one, which, I love my black one, but,
I love all.
Yeah, thanks guys for no warning on that, and I don't even get paid until after this is going to be sold out forever.
What happened?
Yeah,
for those of us not in the know,
Analog announced either today or yesterday that they are coming out with 8 different translucent fantastic limited editions of the Analog 3D. All priced at the same price as the original system, I believe. $30 more. And also, they have matching controllers available. And it's all the translucent colors that the N64 came in at various points, as well as the gold edition and the smoke black edition. They announced that literally 5 days after the original black and white systems were arriving in people's homes.
Yeah.
After over a year of delays.
Yep. I waited, a year and a half, something like that, for my Analog 3D?
However long you waited is exactly how long I waited.
For those.
I mean, end of the day, I probably would have stuck with black anyway, because that, to me, is the N64 color. But
I would have gone with ice. Fantastic ice, the blue one.
I'm definitely buying. Oh, I'm sorry, I keep interrupting you. I'm gonna buy definitely 3 controllers in different colors, because I know those 8-bit dough controllers are gonna stick around for a little while. Probably gonna get a green, a purple, and a I don't know. Just so that when I have people over and we're playing overclocked Mario Party or something, then I can hand everybody their own controller and
purple, the most royal of colors.
Now they do have a grape. They have jungle, which is green, ice, which is blue, watermelon, which is red, fire, which is kind of an orangish, dark orangish, grape, which is purple,
amberish, I suppose,
clear, which is clear.
Oh, I thought smoke, you were gonna say yellow,
which is translucent black, and then the gold one that Chris mentioned.
Mm hmm.
Matching controllers for each. Damn.
Yeah. Nice. But that's maddening. I mean, just not that that they're making them available or whatever. I mean, they, you know, they've been doing these special runs, the one and dones, for like ever since they started, but just that they didn't even like, you know, they didn't even like clue in people on it like until like just now with all these delays and stuff. I don't know. It's just, it's weird.
Yeah. They kind of needed to put a little more breathing room in there. Like maybe three or four batches or something, and then that, but who knows, you know, that they make their money. I'll just say this, like when they do the analog Dreamcast or something someday, I'm not going to order it day one. I'm going to wait until they do the Funtastic Colors, you know, or the aluminum one or the Glowstar one.
Yeah.
And like, they're going to get fucked because people are going to be trained to do that. And because, you know, fool me once, fool me twice, fool me eight or more times.
I will say, I did at least, like, you know, I was able to get a some of the Game Boy Color colored versions that they came out with that one time. Not the translucent ones, but the ones that were fashioned after the Game Boy Color special editions. Mm-hmm. So I got a grape one and a burgundy one for a friend. Oh, berry. I mean, berry is what it's called. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I got it. I wish I could get one right now because mine is effectively dead. I mean, and I was using it for development, so that kind of sucks. You know, honestly, at this point, software emulators for Game Boy are so good that it's fine for dev work, but analog isn't perfect. Analog Pocket when I was doing the Final Fantasy Legend colorization, 3 wouldn't work on an analog, but it would work on the original hardware. So I had to
There's some weird inconsistencies when it comes to FPGA, and I guess it must have to do with the cores or something since people are programming those. Because you would think FPGA, it would be able to do anything, right? Like, it's the point of it.
Mm-hmm.
Weirdly enough, I have some games that like work only in specific conditions on like the weirdest things, or it's like if I play it on an EverDrive on an original system, you know, it doesn't quite work very well. Mm-hmm. But if I play it on the Pocket, then it works perfectly. Actually, the Final Fantasy V Legend of the Crystals, which is the newest fan translation of it, came out like 2 or 3 years ago. Doesn't work on my FX Pack Pro with a SNES. It has a glitch, but it works perfectly on the Analog Pocket in the SNES core there.
The thing about FPGA is that it's like, yes, it's a better form of emulation, but it still has to be created by an emulator author, you know, a FPGA author, prefer. And like, nobody's perfect. There's little bugs, you know. I mean, the Game Boy has like the PAN docs are now like over 25 years old. That's the docs that people use as the centralized tome of Game Boy knowledge. And there's almost everything you could possibly need to know about Game Boy, but they're still not perfect. I guarantee you there's something wrong or missing in that knowledge. And so even FPGA cores are only as good as the knowledge of the Game Boy that exists outside of Gunpei Yokoi's sadly deceased body.
Right. Surely there could have been a better way to put that, but yes.
Yeah.
Oh, Lord.
Yeah.
You have a way with words, totally. Adam.
Yeah. When his sweet, sweet zombie comes back from the dead, then we'll have Game Boy emulators.
He'll eat your brains first. Gunpei.
Yeah.
I'm going to go ahead and say it. I think Gunpei was a better game designer than Miyamoto.
Ooh.
But I think that he didn't. I didn't think he didn't get the shake, the fair shake that Miyamoto did. So,
damn.
That's my own. That's my own hot take, though. Just feel free to ignore it.
Yeah. No. I'm interested because I've never really thought about that. There's a longstanding, belief in certain circles of the game industry that he was offed.
What?
And, Yeah, yeah.
For the Virtual Boy?
No, for the Wonder Swan.
Oh.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm not, you know, I don't know. It's just a, it's kind of like a joking, hushed rumor.
I
Wonder Swan, right?
Adam, it's probably did you kill true. Him because of the Wonder Swan?
Look, I was young. I needed the money. and I'm really good at murder. You know, if you're good at something, you got to do, you know, do what you love. But
that's why I bitch. That's why I bitch and complain all the time.
Yeah. He's good at it.
Yeah. So I've never thought about actually, like, I'm not even sure what all games he's made. I need to look into this. That's fascinating.
You know, it's worth a little deep dive that I'm pretty sure I would not have the time to go into right now. But I will say this: I will say I was thinking about this because there was a Facebook page of some kind of clickbaity, like, you know, ad blog or something like that. Is saying we ranked the 5 worst Super Mario games, and, you know, of course they showed their hand by showing the list. And Super Mario Land, the first Game Boy Mario game, was number 3 on the worst, and it's no, that's what I'm saying. I was like, I blocked that page and didn't even remember their name or anything like that, but I was like, you know, you're free to not like the game if you want, but you come after my boy Gunpei like that, I am going to end your career.
Yeah, yeah.
And Super now Mario we keep Land. Track of how many times we say unique.
Yeah.
Oh, man, who's the producer on it?
We did end a guy's career. No, it wasn't us. But a guy's career ended after we started low-key making fun of him.
Yeah, so it's technically our fault. You mentioned Dreamcast before. What color Dreamcast did you own as a kid?
I have 3 white Dreamcasts.
Sweet.
Yeah. And they all have modems or the Ethernet adapter, which I gather is really expensive now.
Probably, yeah.
I have no idea.
I got into the Dreamcast because I was at a Babbage's or something, and they had the black Sega Sports one. Like, I've never seen a black Dreamcast before. I've heard a lot about the Dreamcast and Phantasy Star Online. I think I'm gonna pick this thing up and give it a go. Me and my girlfriend at the time picked it up, went home, hooked it up to the internet, then I started playing Phantasy Star Online, and then I got addicted.
Yeah, that game, I spent way too much time on that game.
It's so good, though.
I had a friend, Erica, who is sadly passed on, but she used to play with me and my friends, and she was always, apparently, naked while doing it. So all my friends called her Naked PSO Girl. Shout out to you, Erica, wherever you're at. We miss you. And your nudity.
I was friends with some guy in Vegas who played it, and I wish I could remember who the hell it was and try getting in touch with them.
Mm-hmm.
I was just going to say, no.
I forgot that there were other colors of the Dreamcast. Like, I don't know that I've ever actually seen one in a different color besides white. But
yeah, that was right at the time that I was still kind of locked to my small town, you know, and so, you know, if Walmart didn't have it, then I didn't see it, you know, for a long time.
Dreamcast, Trash Rando mentioning that one. Shout out Latino Heat dropping a sub as well, 33rd month. Always good seeing you in chat, hanging out, keeping us company. Enjoy the kitty cats and the emotes. And then bonus contest entries. Tonight's contest, by the way, sponsored by the fine folks at Ubisoft, who sent us code for Assassin's Creed Mirage to give away.
Ooh.
Yeah, Xbox key Marriage. For Mirage. Up for grabs tonight. If you're listening to this, on iTunes or Spotify or YouTube or MP3 or whatever, you fucking missed out.
You missed.
You missed. Gotta be at our Twitch shows, man. Twitch, where it's at. Giveaways. Yeah, Trash Rando had a Hello Kitty Dreamcast.
That's awesome. I just had the white one and it broke like within a year.
Oh god.
I bought a second white one 8 years ago, and I don't know where it is. It's packed up somewhere. So I recently bought a couple of very rare games from a friend too, so I really want to check it out. But I just have not had the energy or time to get in there that garage and find it.
What games did you pick up? What rare stuff?
Elemental Gimmick Gear is one of them. And what's that name? Hang on, I have to look it up.
Brando, I had the Virtual on Twin Sticks for Dreamcast. Holy shit.
Nice. Evolution, the World of Sacred Device is the other one.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Really like the good. Shitty RPG Evolution?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, my
like
God.
Like the one they repackaged on the GameCube, yeah. But it's the original Dreamcast version.
That's worth money?
And I don't... it's rare. I know that much. I don't know. Let me see. Shopping.
Damn.
No, it's like a $50 game or something.
Okay.
I wonder how much I have Rez for Dreamcast. Like everybody knows it from PlayStation 2, but it was also on Dreamcast. I wonder if that's worth anything.
You have the Trans Vibrator.
I did. I have nothing.
Wait, did that get Aki's attention?
Yeah, a little bit. What?
Have you heard of the game?
Like the one thing everybody knows about Rez.
I don't think so, unless that's that big weird cube one where you walk around.
Huh?
Nope. Apparently don't know it. Nope.
I know what she's talking about, but I don't remember what that one's called. And I have to remember.
By the way, Joe, I think you'll enjoy this. The other day, I've got a couple of interns who've been working on projects with us in the office, and they were looking at my collection of games, and they picked up a movie game for Game Boy Color. I'm sure you can guess what it is.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Little Nicky?
And they were like, yeah, Little Nicky. They were like, what the fuck is this? I'm like, it's Little Nicky. It was my first game. And they're like, how much is this one worth? Because we were talking about like Ogre Battle 64 and that copy of Ogre Battle for Super Nintendo, but it's Japanese, so it's not worth as much. Then I ended up working up Little Nicky complete in box on eBay, and some of them are going for like $600.
Jesus.
Because it's rare, you know, because nobody gives a shit about Little Nicky. But collectors,
it's complete. It's worth $600. Yep. Signed by the developer. It's worth $400.
Yeah,
probably. Did you buy a cube game?
What?
Oh, no, I was just saying, do you maybe mean Beat Saber as far as the cube game?
No.
No.
No, you played as a little dude walking around solving a giant puzzle cube that turned with you. It was an indie game of some sort.
I see. Okay, I didn't know that one then.
Fez. Oh, that.
Yeah.
I was close.
Yeah.
Rez is
Vibrator. I would be way more into it if it
Oh, did. Yeah, I remember this thing.
Rez is an on-rail shooter with a trippy soundtrack and wireframe visuals. And
and a controller that apparently doubles as a vibrator.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I looked it up. That thing's powerful.
there was famously a journalist for like Kotaku or 1UP or whatever website was around back then who reviewed the vibrator part like only.
Nice.
Beautiful.
I remember that from back in I remember making fun of that in back in the Live Journal days, so it was a long time ago.
Here's a question, Adam. Dragon Fantasy, where can people find that these days? Like, is it available on anything, or do I have to harass you to re-release it?
That's a great
on
question.
Xbox.
I think it's on Steam. Choice Provisions published it. I think they still have that for sale on Steam. I got to admit, I'm really tempted to port it to Game Boy Color.
I'll be into that.
I'll probably put it on Xbox about 4 years after the Xbox is discontinued. So
makes sense.
You know, you got that to look forward to.
You could put it out on an Xbox that's already discontinued, like the 360 or something.
Yeah, true.
Yeah, yeah.
I asked you about an Xbox version back on episode. Let's see. What's this one here? 51.
51.
Dragon Fantasy Pro Bass Challenge.
Yeah.
Just to confirm for y'all and also for the viewers and listeners at home, Dragon Fantasy is available on Steam, both the games.
Awesome. Yeah, it's been a long time since I've touched them. The thing is that the code base from them I still use it like every day for work. A bunch of the Digital Eclipse collections that I worked on a few years back, they're all running on the Dragon Fantasy engine. Melon Journey was on it. Street Fighter 30th Anniversary Collection in particular, the Digital Eclipse stuff was Mutec is the name of the Dragon Fantasy engine. So it lives on, but I haven't actually touched the game in a while. Part of me is now thinking, God, I should port it to Game Boy Color. which is probably a terrible idea, but
it's probably an awful idea.
I will say, while I was attempting to update my firmware, which, by the way, I am doing right now, it's at 90.20%. However, it has crashed out a couple of times around 90%, so I'm just waiting for it to crash out now. Anyways. I did go around itch.io and start downloading some Game Boy Color like fan stuff and like homebrew stuff and demos to check out. So I feel like with the Analog Pocket and also with all the Pocket emulators that are out now, like people are kind of getting into checking out some of the stuff that's now available for older consoles that can be emulated.
Yeah. Does Limited Run, did they do physical copies of Game Boy games? Is that, I'm not wrong about that, right?
That's Limited Run has, yeah.
Yeah.
The only one I think that I almost considered buying, I want to say Avenging Spirit, they did, but I'm going to check that right quick.
Yeah. If I could get somebody to commit to printing physical copies, I would port them. I think I would.
Didn't we talk to those Incubate
Switch
guys?
It would go good on Switch. Yeah, we talked to Incubate.
Incubate seems to be the place to go for like selling those physicals. Because when I was looking around itch.io pages, there were a lot of comments about, have you tried contacting Incubate to try and publish this game? And then people are like, I just made this in an hour, dude.
Yeah, correct. Who are doing Infinity.
Yeah.
Oh, I do need to look at that, too. You
Infinity's
showed me.
Good.
Yeah.
It's real good. I went and bought like most of their catalog, the digital catalog, after that, cause I really wanted to check some of it. They had some good, shmups. I tried a couple of those and they're very good, but yeah, Avenging Spirit on the Game Boy sold out, of course. But yeah, they did a physical run of it and they had a glow in the dark cartridge, which
that's
is fun.
That's a cool idea for a cartridge.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like it.
Yeah, what about the Switch? Why don't you port it to current gen? Get it on the Switch, get on the PS5, get it on Xbox, PC, Play Anywhere. Everyone loves the Play Anywhere program.
You know, I mean, I would say, oh, you know, I just don't have time, but I also just ported Final Fantasy 1 to Game Boy. But,
checkmate.
Yeah, I genuinely don't have time. Like I just started a project last week and it's
anything fun you could talk about?
Typically speaking, when you start a project last week in the game industry, you don't get to talk about it for a while. So sadly, no.
Anything in the works you are able to talk about?
I don't think so. I mean, there's something that I probably wouldn't get in that much trouble for talking about, but I'd have to check with Mike Micah.
I miss that guy. Tell him we said hi.
I will if I ever can get into touch with him.
Tell him we said hey when you call him to let him know you talked about the game on this episode. Hey, Mike, yeah, I gotta give you a heads up on something.
The only way I can get to talk to Mike Micah is to leak his secrets on the podcast.
he'd be like, no one listens. We'll be good.
Yeah. Nah, he,
like, I mean, which podcast?
I know he, he's just busy. Like, that guy is one of the most overextended dudes in games.
IDARB 2 will never happen.
Oh, yeah, no, it's gonna be, well, it should be a blue box. IDAB.
That's awful.
Yeah, that's a joke that just ruins everything. Everybody shuts up and that's it. Show over. Yeah.
And with that, it's our time. Adam, it's been good now. we can't end yet. We need Purnell to get here in about 10-ish minutes or so. I'm sure he'll be hopping in shortly. What have you got going on in Montana? Like, what's keeping you busy over there? What are you playing these days?
Well, I mean, like I said, I'm doing all the Final Fantasy games in order. A couple of years ago, I built a 6-foot-tall wooden Game Boy. And I'm actually going to take that to one of the bars downtown. Because they broke their, I guess somebody threw a dart so hard that it split their dartboard, and they decided they don't want any more dartboards, so they want me to bring in a giant Game Boy, and I'm like, yeah, I'll bring that in, and they're like, it's gonna get smashed and destroyed, and I'm like, yeah, it's time for it to get smashed and destroyed. I've had it in my garage. So,
I'm how long gonna, until you get darts thrown in it?
I know, right? Well, that'll be fun, because, like, the LED panels that it's built out of might keep working even if they had tarts in them. I don't know, I've been cross-country skiing, and it's really freaking rainy and shitty this winter. There's been very little snow, so
still early, we got a couple months.
Yeah. Drinking, that's one of the things I do here.
Nice.
And I have a son now. I don't know if that was a thing last time I was on the podcast, but my little dude Parker, he's 3.5. He's so much fun. Like, he poops in toilets now, which is great. takes after the old man in that way. Just family life. I was in Japan for a while. That ended up being a big old boondoggle. So not trying to make games in Japan again anytime soon. Yeah. I don't know.
No.
Just keeping busy making games. That's what I love.
When you joined on episode 51, did you think you would talk to me a decade later on episode 1100?
I didn't think I'd ever talk to you again. You were so freaking annoying.
Ooh, the funny thing is, you came back like a month and a half later.
Or get the Xbox. Come on.
You literally came on a month and a half later. Episode 56, I think it was, for bass bottles.
Yeah.
And boss battles.
Most of my appearances have been on, like, shows divisible by 50 or 100, though, right?
I think so.
Yeah.
He likes pretty to, sure you're on 110 and 111.
I was on several last episode evers, right?
We only had the one last episode. Yeah. And then Chris got dumped and we got back together 3 months later and you rejoined us for that one. And we kept going.
The first rebirth.
You were on one of them when we started back up. It's been so long. I can't remember last week, let alone 12 years ago.
Well, I know we used to do it with Mike and Bob. I haven't seen Mike on a podcast or like something like that in a while, but I am working with Bob right now on a project. So it's been nice getting to see him. He's a freaking good dude. And I was talking to him about Game Boy Color audio, because porting it NES to Game Boy, like the sounds are, they're the same kinds of channels. They work very differently. The noise channel on Game Boy, programmatically, it's completely freaking different. So I need his help to figure out how to make it sound right instead of terrible. And you'll hear it when you play it, on your analog pod.
Still have Bob's version of At a Medium Pace from Game Boy.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
That is a thing that I still listen to.
He's really good. Everything he's done. I mean, I remember back in the day, he was working on like a Scooby-Doo game, and they didn't have the rights for the Scooby-Doo soundtrack. So he had to make like something that sounded like Scooby-Doo music, but was legally distinct from it. So it was like, Scooby, Scooby-Dee, where are ye? You know, just like it went up and down every like four notes. And he managed to make it sound good, but wrong, but still good. He's a fucking genius.
Oh, man. So good. So, he's done such weird stuff for us too, like taking the Street Fighter theme from iDarb's update and adding sleigh bells to it. That was a dumb one.
I should have messaged him and said, "Just fucking come on the podcast with me next time."
Surprise, motherfucker!
When you get to episode 1200, give me a month's notice.
Sounds good. I'll do.
I can't promise Mike. Mike's impossible. But Bob's easy.
One day we'll get Mike Micah back on the show.
Yeah.
I don't know how or when, but I'll just take clips from his previous episodes and splice them in.
Yeah. Ooh, let's build an AI Mike Micah.
God. What are your thoughts on AI? Do you hate it like everyone else?
I hate what it is right now. Like, using AI to generate art and replace artists is horseshit. And burning down, rainforests worth of electricity to do it is doubly horseshit.
Yeah.
On the flip side, I have experimented with it to do things that people can't do. Stuff that would just be like prohibitively difficult programming. And I think there's potential there. I think it, like, using it as a tool to replace the work that we do now, fuck that. Using it as a tool to do something we could never have done in the first place, I'm not opposed to that.
That's also what it's supposed to be for, to do things we can't.
Yeah. Obviously, it also needs to be something that can run without like destroying an entire ecosystem. So, like, I have I bought a Framework desktop. It's like Framework's a company that makes my laptop. Also, they're like really repairable machines. And weirdly, the Framework desktop is not that repairable, but it also has 128 gigs of unified RAM. So it can run big AI models on it. And I haven't really found a use for it yet, other than like, Tell me a story, something. Make up a story for Parker that I can tell him tonight. And but the nice thing is that
was an unhappy kitty cat.
That was an unhappy kitty cat. I think Pickle went after Coltrane. I don't know what happened. Happened right behind me. I didn't even get to catch it on stream. Friggin' Pickle. Dickle.
But yeah, like I can, you know, that thing uses less power than my workstation at the office when it's idle. So, like it could get good. It could be an okay thing in the future to do things that aren't possible right now. But again, just replacing artists, drawing stuff like that, like, no, screw that. I did use it to take a bunch of photos I took while I was in Japan and turn them into postcards, like drawn out postcards. And that was kind of fun, but I also felt like I was destroying like the Nile River.
You did.
The Nile's gone now.
Yeah. I read about that in the news. Yeah, it's gone.
All the piranha that were in the Amazon are going to be bagged up and sent to your house the next time you use AI, because it'll dry up the end.
Yeah. Well,
I mean, having when they're dry and dead, they're not as threatening.
Oh no, they're going to be shipped in a bag of water, just one big garbage bag filled with millions of piranha. They'll fit. Don't worry, we'll make it work.
Well, in happier news, my friggin' Pocket firmware update actually finished downloading, and now it's actually updating.
Yay! That's exciting news, isn't it, Purnell?
Fucking yeah!
He's not actually here. Or is he? No, he is.
Or is he? Unless. Oh. Yeah, I got you.
Purnell is here. Purnell, how are you doing?
I'm a little tired. You know how it is lately with these events, but I'm good to go drinking orange juice and tonic water.
I want orange juice so bad.
How did the board gamery go tonight?
It went well. We had to share the space tonight with another entity, though, because there was like a midnight market or something, or market they were running. So that was a thing. But we still got a good turnout and people were happy. So that's what matters the most.
They double booked you, those sons of bitches.
Yeah, it's an annoying thing. But we are starting to grow a bit more. Like, we're talking about, I don't know how it's going to play out planning-wise, but we're talking about doing a convention next year, so that's
God.
Yeah, lots of work.
That's escalating fast.
It'll probably start as a one-day thing first and then go from there, but yeah. We're looking at convention time. You know, well, either way, I think the hardest part is me thinking about how to do like things like a library and shit, because you have to think about what people would want to justify paying that cost. And board games, I would think they'd want a large library, good vendors, and maybe some tournaments at least to start. And
no, you can get Steel Samurai there.
That's the hope. There's been talk about though, like maybe getting some bands involved. And if that was the case, like, okay, well, they'd be one of the first ones I'd reach out to, because Darmok's awesome.
EarnCon 2026.
I think there's a working name in play. This is a method if it'll stick or not. It's like Hexacon or something.
A Pernvention.
I like that.
It should be fun, though. Like, I mean, there's value to it. I can definitely say that. Like, there's not, I mean, we have PAX Unplugged now, but that's once a year and it's massive. There's definitely room for like a smaller event.
How big is PAX Unplugged? Because I've always like kind of been tempted to go to that thing because it's so close, but I don't know if it'd be for me.
Where is
that? I mean,
Philly.
In Philadelphia. I mean, they had like 26,000 people this year.
Holy shit.
Wow.
Yeah. It's a real deal. It's gotten big.
Wow, but I didn't know that got that big. Holy hell.
Like I said, people were hungry for the activity. Like, there's something that nobody else was doing around here. Yeah. These guys showed up and said, you know what, let's change that. And they did. And it was great.
You gonna do any board game stuff at MAGFest?
I haven't decided yet. I gotta figure out what I'm even doing for the event this year, because if I'm not mistaken, the panel's on a Friday this year.
Yep.
So due to that and another thing, I might have to stay the whole weekend for the first time ever. So I gotta nail that crap now. I gotta basically just think about everything that I usually don't. So it's gonna be a trip. But I mean, I figure if I'm going to be there for 3 days, I may as well do some board gaming.
Yeah.
But they haven't, I don't think they announced anything yet, but I have to do, I'm judging the Indiecade this year. So I got to play all that stuff and go from there. But I have a good feeling about it, but I can picture it being pretty fun.
Pretty badass. Adam, are you going to be doing any kind of conventions?
I usually do PAX. I always do GDC because I have to.
Which PAX?
Money for the year. which PAX? Oh, yeah. West.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Because I'm in Montana, so it's the closest to me.
Oh, weird.
I used to love. I actually like East better than West. Just that, like, Boston is such a great city, and like that convention center is just a big giant room. So I kind of like that better than the labyrinthian Seattle one. But I haven't been to that in a really long time. And I've never been to any of the other ones.
We got to get your ass to MAGFest.
I would love to go to MAGFest. That sounds great.
I'm going to MAGFest, man. In January.
I'm going to go to MAGFest.
Book a ticket. Let's talk about it. In our tub.
Let's talk about it. We'll talk about it via the internet later. Yeah, I could get talking to
Chris, you've been to MAGFest, haven't you?
Yeah. I went for a while. I went to... it's always like the years are like weird because you have to subtract a number from the year and then that's the MAGFest. So like I went in 2010, which was Mag 9, the last one that they had in the Alexandria, Hilton. That's where I met Joe. And
yeah. I was fucked up.
Yeah, you were drunk and you were hanging out with Mustin at the 1UP's merch stand, and I was talking to Mustin because I know him.
And well, like the seven times in my life I was like stupidly drunk.
And so I went to and then the one after that, my band was on the main stage, and then I was also on a main stage band the year after that, and that was the final show with my first video game band. And then I skipped a year, and then I came back in 2014, and then 2016 and 17. I think I skipped 15. So, and yeah, 2017 is the last time I went.
You put in quite a bit of time at the Maggings.
Yeah, like, it's always, I've only ever gone when I've had something to do. That is to say, if I've been there as somebody's guest. Like, not, you know, my current video game bands have never been booked there in, like, 12 years. But we still got invited by, like, people who, you know, care about us. Like, and so we played, like, my band Gimmick played both of the Mag Underground shows, which happened in 2016 and 17. And, like, those are really, really, really fun. Like, you know,
those were, like, real underground shows.
They were, like, kind of hidden location, and, like, you know, the rooms filled up, so, like, we couldn't really invite a lot of people. And yeah, until you've had a crowd rush the stage when you're playing Bubble Bobble music, you know, I don't think you've really rocked out as a video game
never
band.
Never fucking lived. Yeah.
Never lived. Yeah. I have video evidence of that happening twice, by the way. It happened both years. The crowd rushed the stage.
Oh, we need some Bubble Bobble music with sleigh bells.
I know. I need to record it.
For my equipment, though, the whole band, like, people rush your stage while you're performing. It's like, oh, my guitar. Don't trip over.
No. I handed my guitar to one of them and just left the stage myself to, like, watch. Like, that's...
Oh, cool.
Yeah, gimmick's more like a punk rock thing. Like, although we are precise and we, like, do, yeah, we do, like, really faithful covers and stuff, our attitude is a little bit more like, let's light this place on fire. I've thrown my guitar, a guitar before. I've handed it off to other people, like, a few times.
I like when people at Magfest just, like, get on stage and jump in and play.
I don't know if it happens on the main stage very often without a lot of planning, but it sure happened on that underground stage.
I remember Chris Huber doing a guitar set on the underground stage where he just did
the jam stage.
Yeah. He was doing, all stuff from, like, Tony Hawk games. Because technically it's a video game music, but he was doing, like, covers of, like, Slayer, shit like that. And, he was doing guitar with backing tracks. And in the middle of one of the songs, some guy just got up, started playing drums, and it was fucking awesome. And then, like, nice. Two songs later, the guy just started, like, going into business for himself with drums, and he was asked to leave.
Oh, well, you know, except for that last part, that's the type of thing that I like to, that's the kind of energy I ideally want to bring to every video game music situation. It's like, dude, let's just have, like, all the fun.
Yeah.
Because who cares? I didn't write this music. Like, we're just rocking out on it. Like, this is just, it's just art. Like, we're just interpreting it, and we're here to have fun. Like, you're not, you know, you don't need to sit there and ponder our, like, deeper meanings or anything like that. It's like, look, here's an obscure Japanese, like, shooter stage music for you to rock out to. And would that more people approached it that way, but, you know, it's fine. People can do what they want.
Yeah. Speaking of doing things that we want and that we have to take care of some reviews tonight. So I think we're gonna wrap up the chit chat portion of this episode. Adam, it was awesome having you on. We love having you here. Please don't wait 2.5 years to come back.
I won't. Let's do it again in 50 to 100 episodes.
Sounds good. Where can people keep up to date with you and what you are doing?
Oh, fuck, you can't. I don't even try. I'm off all the things. I
tagged you on Blue Sky, didn't I?
Oh, you might have. I wouldn't know. I've been logged in for a while. if you want to get a hold of me, if you want to see what I'm up to, hop on a flight on Allegiant, come downtown and just yell Adam and I will be there.
Sounds good.
Sweet.
Great summoning.
Chris, I guess you're gonna head out as well, you said.
Yeah, I gotta go buy some cat food and then go to Betty Bye, but the kitty cats need their wet food, otherwise we will never hear the end of it.
Oh, you don't have any titles tonight?
Huh?
You don't have any titles tonight?
No, I am doing one. I was going to do one this week, but I didn't have as much time to put into it as I wanted because it's a little bit more of a complex one. So it's getting bumped to next week along with the other game I'm reviewing then.
Okay.
Yeah, but it's all good. Yeah,
tonight's
my work
the Aki and Purnell show for reviews.
Yeah, and, you know, work is, like, getting a little bit more stable for me, so although I will still be, like, tired and sleepy, I should be able to be on the show regularly doing my thing.
Yay!
It will be back when the time is right.
Indeed. All right, well, Chris and Adam, we will let you two get going. Thank you so much for coming on, hanging out. Adam, cheers, guys. We'll give it to you. Do you have any final words before you head out?
I'll try to get that Final Fantasy Game Boy thing done and put it somewhere on the internet, wherever fine patches are found.
Yay!
Final Fantasy Game Boy thing. I missed some important shit.
I ported Final Fantasy 1 to Game Boy Color to spite a random person on the internet.
Ooh! Well, I like that. That's my kind.
That's why
spite.
You should be here earlier.
I gave a version of it, so ask Joe. He'll hook you up.
Yeah, I got you, Perno.
I appreciate it. I will dab bull.
Cool.
All right, well, take it easy, guys.
Later.
Cheers.
Have a good night, guys.
Night.
Oh, man. All right, y'all ready for reviews? We got a handful of games to talk about tonight. Nothing too major, but some good stuff. You ready?
Indubitably.
All right, let's kick things off. Marvel Cosmic Invasion, developed by Tribute Games, published by Dotemu, released September, released December 1st on Series X and S, Switch, Switch 2, PS4, PS5, and PC for $29.99. Also available as a part of Xbox Game Pass Ultimate on Series and PC, which I got to play with Purnell on, which was pretty awesome. A cosmic battle awaits. Choose between 15 Marvel superheroes in this frenetic action beat-em-up to fight against the deadly annihilation wave threatening the galaxy. From New York City to the depths of the negative zone, the future of the Marvel Universe will be fought out across the stars. Purnell, what is going on in Marvel Cosmic Invasion?
From a narrative perspective, I sure as hell couldn't tell you because, as you know firsthand, I was like, I don't punch shit. But from the gameplay perspective, a decent, a little bit of a good amount of fun was had here because this is developed by Tribute Games. Tribute Games has been known to develop quite a few awesome titles. Notably, people know them like Scott Pilgrim, for example. I think they did the Turtles game. And here we are again with another genuinely awesome beat 'em up. In this game, like Joe mentioned, you can choose from up to 15 different characters. But whereas most beat 'em up games have you control one character at a time, this game lets you actually select two characters of which you can switch between at will. That is to say, you don't have to worry about charging a certain gauge or a cooldown or anything like that. You want to use one of the other characters, just flip to them. No problem. Use it for as long as you want until they die or whatever. But you are free to choose two characters and flip between them. Characters can, I'm assuming that there's probably a deeper classification system, but as far as I was concerned, they're broken up into two types of character types. There are flying types and there are ground-based types. Flying types, when you press the jump button and then press the jump button again, they stay hovering in the air. And they are very good for fighting, you know, flying monsters. And in addition to that, they have an easier way to get around pitfalls because, they don't have to jump, they just fly over them. Most of their moves that they can do on the ground are generally transferable to the air. And this is a versatile aspect for them. The other type of character, of course, is the opposite of flying, ground-based type characters, which basically they get a jump, sometimes a double jump. And most of their gameplay revolves around them fighting on the ground and any airborne enemies. They generally will try to ascend to just knock them out of the air and then take the fight to them once they hit the ground. You have a basic attack that you can perform, typical punch, punch, punch button. You have a heavy attack. This heavy attack is generally triggered by using a special resource you can collect by fighting enough enemies or sometimes having it drop on the ground, and that can be used to do that attack. Beyond that, though, every character, I guess there's one other thing I'll mention, but every character pretty much has their own set of moves that they have set up for them, and they perform differently. So I don't even feel comfortable saying everyone has a light and a heavy because, for example, you might have a character that has like maybe two variations or three variations of a heavy attack, whereas one character might be primarily based on light or variations of hitting like up and X or something like that. For what they do specifically, there's a whole moves list in the options menu that you can check out to learn what each character can do. But one of the claim of fame in addition to this game that I mentioned before that ties into is the tag mode, whereas I mentioned you can pick two characters and switch between them on the fly. But you can press the tag button while fighting kind of do like a sort of combo attack where your partner character kind of comes in and does an attack alongside you, sort of like Marvel versus Capcom and how that game did it. And it's actually a lot of fun to manipulate and work with, because sometimes you can actually go into a combo, summon the support character just to get extra hits, but other times you can do your combo, and before the normal combo wraps up, you can switch to the other character and maintain the combo string using the other character. And if you had the luck and fortune of choosing two characters with a decent synergy, that feels easier and easier to do because their attacks actually kind of smoothly run into each other. It's a very cool concept for a beat-em-up game, I think. Of course, it also has the traditional, you know, screen wipe abilities where you can just kind of clear the screen if you have the right character. Some cases, the character's special attack or super attack might involve them like doing a lane clear as opposed to a screen clear. But again, it all depends on what character you're using, because they kind of did a decent job of diversifying what different characters are capable of doing. We didn't do the campaign mode. We did the arcade mode, which, in my opinion, is the most important mode. And I am glad to say that it was an absolute blast to play. We did it with three players, which means a total of six different characters getting swapped back and forth at any given time. Madness reigned on the screen. Food items are extremely important in this game, though, because what they decided to do to justify, you know, to make sense of the whole two-player mechanic and the potential ability for your second character to potentially heal a bit when they're in the background, as in not on the field, is to make it so that each character has one life. And when that character dies, they stay dead. I don't remember. Where I played, though, they were dead. But basically, if a character gets knocked down, they're down. If you lose both characters, you have to continue the game. Yeah. And then you can pick two different characters and come right back at it like nothing ever happened, with the exception of your deliciously high score now being dirt zero.
Yeah, that's how I know that. You and Big Adam both ran into the issue of having to continue, while me with my unstoppable Wolverine, who seems incredibly overpowered in this game, by the way, just wrecked shit.
Yes, we did. It was a great time. They do have an interesting mechanic where at certain points in the stage lineup, they will allow you to choose what level you want to go to, and it becomes a player's vote as to what level they opt to enter into. Beyond that, you're running through stages, beating jerk bags up. There aren't any vehicle levels, at least that I came across, or that we came across. Maybe there's a special one that we didn't see, but there's no vehicle levels. But you run through a typical beat-em-up level. There's occasionally the secrets that you can find on levels too. They're referred to as cosmic cubes. You might notice a sparkle on the level somewhere, and if you can find it, smash it and collect it, you can then use those on the cosmic cube side menu on the off the main menu to acquire various unlockables, such as palette swaps and music tracks for sound mode and other such things.
Nothing groundbreaking. Those are related or not.
I think they are. Because remember, we were getting like a bunch of green cubes, and when you go to that screen, we had like 27 of them.
Yeah, but I got a bunch when I played solo, and then we would collect the same ones together, and we definitely got more cubes than we found. I'm not entirely sure what contributes to the unlockable cubes.
Now you got me wondering. Maybe it's possible that there's like different types, and maybe some of the cubes come from the hidden ones, and others might be like those gremlins dropping them when we smack them while they're carrying their bags around.
Very possible.
To be safe, let's just say as you play, you'll get cubes. And those cubes can be used to unlock things on the cosmic cube menu. Also, as you play through the game, even though you don't get a real visual indication of it, your characters do level up as you play. And the level ups are nothing to, you know, sneeze or write home about. You'll get basic things like a little more HP, maybe a little bit more oof in a specific attack or whatever, but nothing groundbreaking. But one thing I should mention, because I didn't even notice until we beat the game and went and looked at the library to learn the character's moves, is that every character in this game also has a passive ability too, which might factor into who you decide to favorite in the long run. I don't think the passives are strong enough to make or break a play. But if you're going for high-level play, they will definitely make a difference, I would bet. So, something for that to keep in mind as a player, too.
Doing some reading, it looks like the collectible items, the unlockable items, come down to completing level challenges and finding the hidden cubes.
So that's how we ended up with more than we collected.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. That makes sense then. But ultimately, if you like this game and you're having fun, you're going to get a lot of cubes. So get ready to spend them. I think at the end of the day, this game felt, I'm not going to go so far as to say, oh, it felt like a revolutionary beat-em-up, because far from it. It didn't really make me, you know, flip out, with the exception of the flying characters. I thought they were a lot of fun to work with. But in the grand scheme of things, this is a high-end, well-polished, and most importantly, very fun beat-em-up game that can be played with your friends locally or multiplayer. And it's designed in a way where there will be multiple sessions to be had. You unlock a few characters as you play through the game. There was one character we did not unlock. And the best part is you can unlock them during a play. And if you die and continue, you can select the unlockable characters during that run. You don't have to wait for a fresh play to do so. So you can experience them as early as you get them. But I had a great time playing this game. And though it should come as a surprise to literally no one, this is an absolute recommendation. If anything, the real joke is that we got to play this for free because I knew I wanted it. But well, it was worth every penny. Oh, boy, well, I appreciate you.
I played it on Game Pass, so I got it free-ish. I pay for Game Pass, but...
Well, in that case, I'd say you got it for free-ish. Play one more game, and it's like, that was the free one. Free-ish. But yeah, I think this game is a lot of fun.
Yeah, I agree with that. We played it. Me, you, and Big Adam Chase, we played it Sunday night, and we had a blast. We tore through the entire arcade mode. I still got to finish the campaign mode, but... What was it like?
Do you have any thoughts on the campaign?
Minutes,
now,
2 hours. If you play, it's pretty much the same. It's just you choose which levels you're going to, and you can replay them to complete the different challenges.
Ah, okay. So it's kind of like how the Turtles similar. Game had it, where it's like a map.
Yeah.
Okay. In that case, and yeah, not too much to change. It's just another coat of paint on the same overall gameplay, which is fine because the gameplay itself is very solid.
Indeed. Well, this one clocks in at $29.99. Also available as part of Xbox Game Pass Ultimate and PC. What are your thoughts on Marvel Cosmic Invasion?
Absolutely easy buy it recommendation, without a doubt. Great game.
Agreed. If you're playing this solo, maybe not as much of a must buy. If you've got friends to play with, whether local or online, pick it up, and the fact that it has crossplay makes it even better, because you played on Steam, Adam played on Xbox PC, and I played on Xbox console.
Oh, nice. So I realized we were all on different game systems. I knew you were, but I didn't know what Adam was playing it on.
Yep. Yay, crossplay. Hell yeah.
More companies need to do that.
Yeah, I know. Crossplay should be standard now. Like, it shouldn't be a special thing anymore.
I concur.
Next up, Routine, developed by Lunar Software, published by Raw Fury, released December 4th, Series X and S and PC for $24.99. Routine is a first-person sci-fi horror title set in an abandoned lunar base designed around 80s vision of the future. Curious exploration turns into a need for survival when a lunar base goes completely quiet. Searching for answers puts you face to face with an enemy who is certain the main threat is you. Discoveries lead to deeper unknowns, and the only way to go is forward. Aki, what is going on in Routine?
Okay, so about Routine, you're going to routinely die. Yeah, and this, you play as someone who just gets out of cryo sleep, more or less, and it very quickly devolves into a puzzle where you have to hide from giant robots that are out to kill absolutely every living creature in this entire facility on the moon. Something has happened, and the robot's system has decided that all living entities need to not be so much living anymore. So they've activated a lot of the robots around to start slaughtering people. Yay! These are big fuck-off-sized robots that are like people, except for Hulks. And you don't really have any way of so much destroying them. So you can find this little weapon thing, we'll call it, for lack of a better word, called a cat. And it's basically a scanner and problem solver and shooty pew pew item. So, and to use it, you actually have to look at it. There's a button to bring it up, and then you actually have to control the cursor to click on different things on it. There's a button that you click that attaches, sends out and attaches to wireless signals. With that, you're able to go in and view any passwords you've obtained, any videos you've obtained, pictures you've obtained, as well as save your game. You can only access these in certain areas, because there isn't just wireless stuff everywhere. You usually see a screen that says, oh, wireless connection here, and then you use it when you're close to it, and you can save there. There's also batteries that you equip into it. They give you 3 shots. It takes 2 shots to stun a robot for a while, a very short while. It's like 10-ish seconds, if that. And then it's back to chasing you, and you have to find another battery because you can't do anything with 1 shot. Woohoo! And then there's also a debugger menu on it that you push when you're near a system that's all sorts of fucked up to see if you can try and figure out what the problem is and solve it so you can use whatever that system is. Usually they're going to be panels to allow you to open doors and things, electronic panels and the like. There's also modules you can find for the item, and you have to flip those modules out in order to use them. And while they're in use, you can't shoot the guns. You have to flip it in and out, which requires you also to look at the gun. So, yeah, you're trying to get through this facility to, I assume, find your way out. I haven't really fully grasped what you're doing because this game is incredibly hard. Because unlike Alien Isolation, where there's one jackass that you have to hide from, in this one, there might be like 3 or 4 of them in an area. And they kind of move at random, and they will overlap each other's areas pretty regularly. And if one of them starts chasing you, you need to find a place to hide. And chances are, by the time you find a place to hide, you will have run right through like another 2 of them, and now are running from 3. And yeah, if they catch you, it's not an immediate game over. You do get a couple grabs before they just stab their hand through your chest. There's no healing items, so it's just you get caught a couple times and you're screwed. Restart from checkpoint. So yeah, you have to escape these things while figuring out how to open different people's doors, get into different rooms, activate different panels, find areas that help you hack through things. It's a lot. And while you're doing this, you're also finding notes from people who survived the initial onslaught. Whether they're still alive or not is questionable. But you can find them writing notes to each other, sometimes on terminals, sometimes on boards or on walls, what have you. And you also see occasionally bits of videos that they've started to pull up, whether they ever actually got to see it or not. Again, questionable, which gives you more information on why this has all happened. It does take a while to actually solve it all, though. So, yeah, it's pretty fun. It is extremely difficult. It took me a few hours to get through, like, just the first room of bots, because there was like 3 bots in there, and it took me a while. So, yeah, this game does not fuck around. You will die routinely, as I said. Yeah, that is going to be your routine. Die, reload, save.
Nice.
Yeah. Thankfully, there's a lot of batteries in most areas. There's a ton of batteries, so you shouldn't hopefully run out of batteries too easily. So you can always hit the enemies, and they don't come running at you or anything. They just steadily walk towards you if they see you. So you have plenty of time to shoot them too, which makes life easy. But they do like boost sideways to avoid being shot at sometimes. So you have to pay attention to that, or else you'll waste one of the three shots, and it takes two to take one of these down for a little while. You better hope that after you take it down, there's another battery real fucking close, or you're real fucking fucked.
Yeah. All right, well, anything else, or are you ready to talk price?
I would like a couple things, them to change a couple things about the game. This really doesn't hold your hand and doesn't explain things to you very thoroughly. And for some of the early puzzles, like, for instance, you have to look down at yourself because you can actually see your body. You have to look down and see a code that's written on your pass. It never tells you that that's there. It, one of the puzzles, not super early, but fairly early on in the game, required that number. I didn't know that number existed. So it would have been nice if it like gave like a little screen hint of, hey, stupid, look down, you might notice something, or something like that. Like, it gives you hints of, oh, this is on top of this thing, and you have to go find that thing, and you may not know what that thing is. Is necessarily, let alone where it is, and it just a little more hand holding would be appreciated. Just letting us be free in here doesn't necessarily work with puzzles that are this vague and complex sometimes. So a little more hand holding would be nice. And if we got more than three charges for our gun, that would be great. Because you miss more than once, you're screwed. And even if you don't miss, then you still have to grab another battery anyways, because one doesn't do anything. So, meh. Nice. Those two things, I think, if they could do something about those two things, I think it would help a lot.
If the robots look like the picture I just put in scheduling and planning, would it be a lot scarier?
Let me see. I swear to God, if this is a spider, I'm going to quit. Oh God, that would be horrific. I can barely.
That's the point. That is the point of barely being able to tell. $25. What are your thoughts on routine?
You know, I'm fairly for it. I think if you liked Alien Isolation, this is definitely a game for you. If you did not like that game because it was too anxiety provoking or what have you, this isn't going to help. At all. This is going to be torturous. But if you liked Alien Isolation, you're like, I want more of this, maybe even a little harder, this is totally a game for you. Everyone else probably need not apply, realistically, because this is very anxiety provoking and it's extremely hard.
Yeah. All right. Well, moving on. Next game to talk about is Demio Cross Dungeons & Dragons Battle Marked. Developed and published by Resolution Games, released November 20th on Steam for $29.99. Experience the magic of Dungeons & Dragons like never before in this tactical, cooperative, digital board game set in forgotten realms. Command your heroes, unravel sinister plots, and forge mighty alliances in turn-based combat and choice-based storytelling. From recognizable settings and classic D&D classics like Paladin, Sorcerer, Ranger, Fighter, Bard, and Rogue, to fiery explosions and divine healing, Battlemark delivers quick pick-up-and-play action for players of every level. Pernell, what is Demio Cross Dungeons & Dragons Battlemark?
What I gather from my time with it, it could best be described as them taking two D&D campaigns and a number of optional unlockable one-shot dungeons, whether they're unlockable in-game or in a future patch or something, I don't know. But you get access to these campaigns. For example, there's the basic two campaigns you get access to start that you can choose from. And it seems to just play through a full-on campaign with you being in the helm with the game interface allowing you to experience it with beautiful visuals and audio. At the beginning, though, the most obvious thing you'll have to do is choose a campaign to run through. I chose Ember of Chaos as mine to start. And once you do, you are then tasked with choosing a hero. There are six different characters to choose from, each referring to one of the six different character classes that you mentioned earlier in your description. Whereas you might be thinking at the beginning, oh, well, I can customize and create my own character. In the case of this game, they are six characters already built that you can choose from. However, once you choose one, you're able to kind of change their color, the color of their costume or their skins or whatever. In addition, you can potentially over unlocks and from the start also change the color of your dice in the standee that they run on. Standee, yeah, because they are actual figures you move around on a map when you play this game. So there you go. Once you've done that, the game, at least what I allowed the game to do, it will, if you're playing single player, create three hireling characters that will be your other party members while you play. I'm going to say right off the bat, and I'll tell you why later on, but if you have friends who play with you, the optimal way is to play multiplayer online with your friends. But if you don't have friends playing with you at the time, then you get hirelings to use. But either way, once you've chosen your hirelings and had your character, you are thrust into the gameplay as is. The game is done over a course of various story beats. For example, the very beginning of Ember Chaos, the game places your party in a forest just in time to watch a noble running from monsters, and he asks for you to save him. At that point, the game immediately says, let's get busy, and there you go. Characters have the ability to move, the number of movement spaces available to them, and this is done in order, in a specific order of characters, and then monsters get to go. If you move, and this is something I'll mention here because I didn't realize it for quite a while, actually. If you decide to move and you move into an enemy, that triggers an attack. So you can attack during a movement action. You do not have to not. You do not have to do one or the other. If you do decide to do an attack, whether through this or some other means that I'll bring up shortly, the game will roll a die for you. Whereas in certain situations, such as succeeding or failing in a check, the die that you roll here is not a traditional D20. Instead, it is a pass, fail, or critical die. And a number of the die faces on it, of which I think it is still 20 sides, a number of the die faces will be a single sword, referring to your attack is successful. Do some damage. If you get cross swords, it's a critical, and you'll do a lot of damage. If you roll the skull, you failed. And that can have a variety of effects depending on what you were trying to do. Anything ranging from you just straight up missing to hitting an enemy you weren't aiming for. Sometimes maybe even hitting your friend. That's just the dims the brakes, I guess, when you roll poorly on a D20 that has swords on it. But that is the primary thing, the way to get around. In addition, though, every character has a boutique of cards they can play. And those cards range from... Ooh, that's a new one for us. That can be used to perform a variety of different attacks. And these cards are specific to the individual characters at play. When you play a card, sometimes they'll get burned. Other times, they may have a cooldown. What that basically means is that you'll never run out of actual cards. The game won't allow that. However, you could find yourself potentially in a situation where all of your cards are on cooldown and you have you don't have any single-use cards. Some cards require no action points to use because, as I mentioned earlier, you get two things you can do per turn. Some use one action point, some use no action points, and some will use both. So, spender beware, as it were. And again, these will save your butt more often than not. So do not sleep on using them. And the game does not limit you from getting more because by defeating enemies on the board, the game will re-roll a new card for every party member to get into their arsenal to potentially play off of. So that is a good reason to kill monsters. In addition to that, though, you'll also level up or get experience points. And when you complete missions, I want to say that the enemies are part of what generates the experience points, but ultimately you complete missions, you'll get experience points. And those experience points, when you level up, will gain you action points. And those action points can be spent in the party member on your character sheet to upgrade one of your traits. Your character has three different traits that is associated with them. Two that, to my understanding, are defaulted to your character based on who you chose. But the third one can be chosen from a series of like multiple trees. So you might be like, oh, I want to make this character a wisdom type character. And then that character as a wisdom character will have three different upgrades they can earn with that class. You'll spend those action points to upgrade your character. For example, as the ranger, first thing I purchased was the ability to take one less damage when I'm down 5 HP or less, which is very smart because there are scenarios where a critical fail will result in you getting your ass utterly beat. Don't ask me how I know that.
How do you know that?
It was bad.
Because it got ate by a dragon.
No, I was actually trying to sneak past some bears to steal some honey in the woods so a guy can make some pancakes. And that's fitting for this show. Yes, yeah, very fitting for this show. I was trying to steal maple syrup so they can be applied to pancakes and it would make him happy. For experience points, you see.
Pancakes.
And I had to roll a die to sneak past some bears. I got a critical fail. Not just a fail, but a critical fail. The character tripped on themselves right between both bears. They woke up, and then a bunch of animals just swarmed us in addition to the bears. Like, well, this sucks. And I'm lucky I got out of that battle alive. Worth mentioning right here, since I'm talking about the different traits and upgrading them, the reason why I mentioned that it is better to play with friends is because the other three characters you get in your party, i.e. the hirelings, do not level up. Only the character you have as your primary character levels up. I don't necessarily think that that makes the game unplayable. I do believe, however, it does mean that you will be carrying around three deadweight losers compared to your jacked up character who's actually seeing progress through the game.
To be fair, hirelings exist for one purpose. They carry loot, and that's it. They carry all your ill-gotten gains, because realistically, that's what most of this is probably, is ill-gotten gains. They carry it back to civilization for you so you can sell it, since you can't carry it all yourself. That is the only purpose they serve.
I definitely get that concept, but in this game, they do carry that mindset like they're just here to fill some space for you for the one purpose. But I will definitely tell you, if you tried to use these guys just to carry loot, you are going to get your ass kicked. You need these guys. Because the monsters that come out on these boards are designed to be dealt with with a full party. That's pretty much why they give you the access to them. But I also would like to think that they designed this in such a way that it is manageable. It may not be perfect, but it is manageable to play through with your main character and then the three hirelings. So it's one of those cases where it's like, if you play with friends, your friends will have their own characters, and then of course they will level up and they will attribute their skill points to various traits, and you might, hey, where's your unique character play? Like, well, my guy does this
unique
versus your guy who does that. But it just loses some luster when you just have a really cool rogue character in your party and they're just not changing in that sense. But their cards will still come out differently as you play through and earn more as you'll kill monsters. So there's that. In between battles, you'll go to the main map, which is like a tabletop map. I do like how they visually made that. It's an actual table with figurines on it, and you choose a flag post that's on the map that says, you're going here. And there's certain areas that may not even be battle-related. It might be a town. And you can move your figures using the action turns they've got to talk to characters, gain new side missions, potentially get some new treasures, which might be like equipment to equip on your character to change their, you know, their attack properties and such. It's just a genuinely good time. Like, if you have ever had an inkling of like, man, what is a tabletop RPG battle like? Doubly so if you've been familiar with playing the traditional tactics RPGs that we've gotten accustomed to since time immemorial. This is a good way to reconcile that interest in seeing that while also keeping it associated and connected with something you're familiar with, i.e. video game tactics RPGs. I find a lot of joy in this. I like having the conversation with the characters. They did a good job voicing each of them and giving them all personalities that are unique of their own. Music is good. Presentation is great. Like I said, my only complaint is the level up thing, but that's small potatoes, really. At the end of the day, this is a good presentation. I like to believe that there will be more campaigns made available in this as we play over time through development and some DLC maybe or whatever. But as it stands right now, even, I think this is a solid product. And I didn't even mention that you do side quests during the campaigns too. So like, again, the honey thing, I could have just kept going in regards to, you know, continuing the quest to, you know, mend the truce between two countries. But instead, my boy wanted maple syrup for his pancakes. And the side quest with experience bonus was right there. So, I mean, of course I want to do it.
All right. That's stock price, $30. What do you think?
Easy buy. Easy buy. If you're on the fence in regards to, like, but I will, don't play D&D, I play, you know, Final Fantasy Tactics. Well, first of all, you're not getting a job system here, so screw that. But furthermore, I would say at least give it a try. Make it a try in that context, because I do think there is stuff to love here, even if you have not engaged in this sort of thing before.
All right. Moving on, next game, Star Ors Inc., developed by Blackbeak Games, published by Three River Games, released November 28th, Series X and S, Switch, and PS5 for $19.99. Star Ors Inc. is an intergalactic mining adventure that catapults you on an abandoned space station in the middle of space. As a freshly minted entrepreneur, you must begin your career in a world full of ores, machines, and galactic possibilities. Dig through massive asteroids and extract rare minerals, which you refine into valuable high-tech products. With the help of specialized robots, conveyor systems, and automated machinery, you build an efficient production chain from raw materials, from raw material extraction to sales. Aki, tell us, what is going on in Star Ors Inc.?
Okay, so this, you play as some schlub who has decided to buy this mining asteroid that has been abandoned by a corporation to make yourself some money by plucking the resources from a rock that realistically should already have had all of its resources plucked from it. And you get a nice little facility that's already been built, even though it has been covered with muck and rocks have caved in parts of it, so you have to clean it up. And you have yourself a nice little robot that talks to you and tells you what to do, and otherwise is completely useless. And you're given a little driller, and you're sent to go to town. You destroy biomass that you find in order to open up pathways, and occasionally you'll find some ores and ingots and stuff in them. And you start destroying rocks until you find an ore area. Once you do, you start mining it, and you sell the shit that comes out of it for some money that you can use to repair some of the broken droids that are around that will inevitably do other things for you. As you break down rocks, there'll be smaller rocks around. Destroying those can occasionally net you some resources, but they always net you experience. These little robots, you can set them up to destroy those. You can set them up to grab resources and just bring them to the upper area where they store them all so that you can quickly sell them. They can go and grab things and bring them to smelters. Once you have started building things that allow you to build ingots, you can take the various ores and have them smelted, so they'll pick them up and bring them there. Or you can have them actually act as the salesman, and they will take stuff from that storage and place it into an area where everything is sold. All sales are timed, so if you're not quick enough, they'll buy whatever item that you have filled out and just won't buy the other stuff that they wanted. So let's say they want 5 of this blue ore and 4 red ingots. Well, if you're able to get 3 blue ores in there and all 5 red or 4 red ingots in there, they'll buy the red ingots. They won't buy any of the blue ores, even though you have part of that order fulfilled for them. So, fun. If you're able to sell them everything they want, they will give you a bonus for buying, for giving them everything they wanted, which is nice. They only have things, they only request things that you actually can fulfill, whether that stuff is in the storage or not. So if you have like
a bunch of blue ore that's just sitting and hasn't been collected and brought up, they might want blue ore. You don't have any of your in your storage, but you do have some. Now you have to go run against the clock to go grab as many of them as you need and bring them up to sell them. As you continue through the game and you make some money, you can buy stations for different things. So you can buy automatic drillers that will start drilling up very slowly, admittedly, but they will slowly dig up the different ores, and you can eventually upgrade them to where they will dig infinitely. So even after that ore is exhausted, they'll just keep digging and pulling up more of that ore anyways, which is something you can also do, but you doing it takes forever because you have mined that ore out. So realistically, you shouldn't be getting any, so they just make it take forever. After a while, you will eventually gain, obviously, the smelters that I mentioned to create ingots. And then at some point later on after that, you get the ability to create cores, which are like batteries for spaceships, more or less. And there's a few different types of those that are used for different items on spaceships that you can start making and selling. And those typically require ingots of different colors to be combined to create something. In order to buy any of this stuff, you have to have found the prior item first. So you have to have mined a standard blue ore before you can buy the smelter for a blue ingot, for instance, because it wants you to take this as a step-by-step process. While you're doing this, you're unlocking more and more of the facility because you're using some of that money to hack open doors, as well as obviously to increase how powerful your own driller is, so you can break down the different types of colored rock that are in the area, so you can get to more and more veins of different colored ores and the like. And yeah, this is a fun little game. If you like mindless, like, collect-a-thon type things, this is almost an idle game once you get the automation set up. Right. And yeah, I really had fun with this, personally.
Cool. It's a $20 game. What are your thoughts on it?
I'm totally for it. I thought it was a great little game.
Awesome. All right, next up, Scrabdackle. That's a fucking great name.
Sounds dirty.
Like, what else do you say besides that's a great name? Scrabdackle, developed by Jake Friend, published by Fellow Traveler and Jake Friend. Act 1 released December 2nd on Steam Early Access for $14.99. Future acts will come through Early Access along with price increases. So get in now if you are interested. Scrabdackle is a hand-drawn, using traditional animation techniques, with tons of curious creatures to study, characters to squabble with, and tough but fair bosses to overcome. Made by one developer who was maybe a little overambitious about all this. Here's the setup. When the Wizard Academy is attacked, novice student Blue is thrown out of the Academy's window and face first into the unfamiliar world outside. Pushed out of their sheltered life, Blue reluctantly sets off on a long journey home, learning to navigate the world of Scrabdackle for the first time. Along the way, they'll contend with daunting foes, as well as the uncomfortable truths, as they reckon with just how much of the world outside differs from their books in their academy. It's a big game with a huge, sprawling world worth getting lost in, if you're up for a bit of adventure. Pernell, what is Scrabdackle?
So, on the easiest way to describe it, Scrabdackle is pretty much a action-adventure game in the vein of Legend of Zelda. You are exploring an overworld, engaging with enemies, finding secrets, of which there are a lot, even mundane ones like a hidden door that just leads to the other side of a rock that could have been walked to just to see. But nonetheless, there's a lot of like random hidden passages in this game. You will be exploring all within the pursuit of getting your butt home and engaging with a variety of weird and wacky characters. Your main method of attack is your magic wand, of which you can find up to three different spells that can be associated with it to do different attacks. It's originally early on that you start with just like a basic one where you can kind of match the attack button to fire wacky little pew pew magical balls. Your magic wand, however, does have a energy meter, and if you overload it by shooting too many bullets, it'll go into overheat and cool need to cool down for a bit. And since this game does not offer the ability to have auto fire, unless I missed it in the menus option somewhere, it adds one added extra element of tension in combat where you're like, okay, I want to keep the pressure on while hitting these enemies, but I can't overdo it or I'm going to have a cooldown period. Oh boy. That is to say, I both hate and like that at the same time. So just putting that out there. But that's the primary method of attack. You'll occasionally also come across little magic orbs or magic bits by destroying objects or defeating enemies. These can be used to spend at a multitude of different merchants. Not the usual where it's like a swath of items to make your pick or whatever, but generally a character might say, hey, I have this cool thing. Would you like to buy it from me? So you'll be able to use those to get new items that can be used in gameplay or to increase your mobility or give you more access to options increase your ability to explore the world, so to speak. The game, more or less, is pretty friggin' challenging, though it may be because I set the difficulty to be that way, because they do give you a variety of different options to choose from, and I couldn't take this game and not go, at least semi-hard. I didn't go hardest, but I went hard enough, because in the right situation, battles in this can get pretty tense. Giant, hulking beasts slamming into each other, trying to crush you, while a little smaller, very fast monsters are running around at the same time, and you're hitting your dash boots button to just try to get out of the way and stay afloat, sport like a butterfly, sing like a bee and whatnot. Takes keep a low on afloat. It makes battles nice, fun, and tense. And when you're not fighting, or sometimes while you're fighting, you will be dealing with a number of overworld puzzles as well to solve. You will find yourself, I don't want to say so much scratching your head, but there will be times where you're going to really seriously be like, how the hell am I supposed to get over there? Or how am I going to get these light bridges to coordinate in such a way to get me to that and then also get back over here? I think they did a good job with those. And they're not just like, walk up, hit switch, and thing happens. Usually you might have to figure out a good way to incorporate them into another element of the room to solve the thing you need. Secrets that are meant to be discovered in addition to just finding some money also comes in the form of gold stars, which can be acquired and amassed for reasons. Also, just as a nice checklist to say, I found X number of secret rooms. The humor in this game, most notably, I think is the main reason, next to the art, is the main reason why I think this game is a really solid bet, because I have laughed out loud multiple times at conversation that the characters have in this game. There's something kind of funny about the fact also that you can walk up to a character, conversation kind of starts on its own just by walking up to them, and you can press A to select things, or the cross pad, not the analog, but the cross pad to go between options. But at any point in time, you feel like you can just walk away. Sometimes the character will actually express how annoyed they are that you walked away from them while they were talking to you. But there's just something kind of funny about the ability to do that. Just walk, you can walk in circles around like, man, I'm just impatient, but I'm talking. I mean, just weird stuff like that. But I like it. I like that aspect of it quite a bit. I would also say that I'm terrified of what the end of Act 1 is going to be, because I want to know what the heck's going to happen next. But with the amount of time I put into this, it's nice to know that there's enough content here to justify even just playing Act 1. I think you're getting a good bang of money for your buck here by paying for this. But I ain't going to say but. It's 100% that I feel like there's good value here. That's where the but would have come in. Even if you're concerned about getting a full narrative or whatever, just knowing that you're getting a good game to start, and as long as this guy hopefully gets enough money to do so, we'll be able to produce Act 2 eventually, and you'll have even more fun to engage with. But as it stands now, this game is already plenty fun, and I look forward to seeing what more this guy does, because, again, one of those cases where I had never heard of this game before it came through the show, and now I'm really glad I did, because this is going to make the list of favorite games of 2025.
I am going to guess that what they do next will be Act 2 and 3.
Well, it's more when. And also, who knows? He might pivot. He might pivot to another game in addition to Act 2 and 3. This guy can be all. He said it himself. He might have bit off more than he can chew. Maybe. Which means he's prone to do it again.
Now, Act 1, it contains 12 to 15 hours playtime estimated, 9 bosses, 11 regions, a bunch of music and journal entries. Locks in at $14.99. Acts 2 and 3 will have about the same as Act 1, and the price will increase again as Acts 2 and 3 come out. Is it worth getting in on this at $15? Should people pick it up, wishlist it, favorite it, ignore it? What do you think? What should people do with the Scrabdackle?
I'm basing it solely on Act 1. I'm not even concerned about 2 and 3 in that capacity, and I think it's worth buying. Those are just a bonus. Now, admittedly, if this story wraps up and they don't increase the story, you might be like, crap, what happens? He gets to the Wizard Academy, and then what? But it's fun now. Who cares?
All right. Well, we got 2 more games to talk about, and they're kind of a package deal. Right, Norg?
SML After Dark.
That's right. It is After Dark time with Monster College and Monster City. Aki, you ready to get naughty?
Always. Always.
Okay. Yeah, figures. Monster College, developed and published by Monster Eye Games, released back May 26th on Steam for $9.99. Protagonist of this story discovers that he is a werewolf. In his new life, he will meet beautiful women, each with their own fascinating peculiarities. Demons, vampires, zombies, werewolves, gorgons. And Aki, you're gonna fuck them all, aren't you?
Oh, by God, yes. Every damn one of them. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, tell us about it.
Okay, so in this, you play as a young man who, whilst he is with his girlfriend, who has convinced him to move in with her by stripping naked, she decides in the middle of the act that he's a werewolf as his body starts to transform. And then he runs off because he doesn't understand what's happening. He doesn't know what's going on. He does not want to involve her in whatever this bullshit is. So he runs off, and his dad quickly finds out, and he's like, oh yeah, you're a werewolf. Thank God you finally transformed. I wasn't sure it was ever going to happen. Sometimes it skips a person. You never know. So yeah, you're changing very late in life, and your dad's super excited, and he's like, I get to finally bring you to the University of Silverleaf. So you're like, you try to get information out of him. He's like, nah, that's part of the fun, is the experience of getting to see things for the first time. And he sends you to this monster university, basically. And you immediately have foot and mouth syndrome, and it is fantastic because your thoughts aren't necessarily always just yours anymore. As you find out from meeting your new best friend, Lenny, he is a slime, and he is one of the ugliest fucking things I've ever seen. And he can read minds because he doesn't have a mouth, and he must scream. So fun. Yep. And yeah, you very quickly get to interact with people. You get to bang a bunch of them. For instance, the lady who gets all the newcomers in and signs them up and everything, gets them okayed to come to the school, she's a succubus, so that's fun. And this is all a visual novel, by the way. It's an adventure visual novel, so you get to make all the choices. And you meet a gorgon named Lily, who's very pretty, but seems to have a sinister side where she's very manipulative and kind of a piece of shit. You meet Rachel, who's a vampire, who is like spitting in the face of vampire society by, instead of dressing like Dracula, she dresses in the brightest, most flamboyant clothing possible. and so on and so forth. All the girls are very different from each other in both species and personality. One of my favorite ones was a mermaid named Grace. And in this game, unlike how you're probably picturing a mermaid, instead she is completely humanoid from head to toe, except for she is scaled all over, and she has spines on her arms that I assume are poisonous or something. They don't really go into it. And she's super cute, and she lives to make people uncomfortable. So like in your first meeting, she's like, okay, so which one of these two people are you trying to sleep with? And your answer can be either one of those people, both of those people, or Grace herself. And she's like, and if you pick any of them, she's like, oh, I was just trying to mess with you. That didn't work. And it's pretty fun. So you're both trying to help all these girls with their own individual issues. Like with Rachel, how I mentioned that she spits in the face of, you know, the concept of vampires. Her family doesn't know that, and they would be very unhappy if they did. So you're trying to help her deal with that situation. And also, something weird happens at school. They had a magical stone that made people not want to come near the school. So it didn't hide it. It just made people not really want to go there. Not like, oh, we're scared of that place. It was just like, oh, there's nothing there. Let's ignore it, basically. And it gets stolen. And now you're trying to figure out how to find it, even though you're a student and the teachers are trying to find it, because you don't trust them all. So you're trying to find this because all these girls you like, so many of them, well, they're clearly not people. So
has and that yeah, ever stopped you?
Oh God, no, no, no.
Is it gonna stop you here?
Oh God, no.
Is anything gonna stop you here?
No, probably not.
Didn't think so.
Yeah, see, the dev of this doesn't understand what they've made, I don't think, and that's a problem. Because they made this and put it in the guise of a dude. The thing is, for monster fucking, that's a big lesbian thing. Like, that's way, way up there in things that lots of lesbians have in common. So really, should have made this a woman pining after women instead, and would have gotten probably significantly more sales, ironically. So, yeah, but it's great fun. You get to create a harem. Not all the girls will join it, sadly. Some of the girls you don't even have, like, proper relationships with. They're just more like fuck buddies, more or less, which is kind of sad because that's ends up being what Grace is regulated to, which makes me sad because she's by far my favorite character. But yeah, lots of really attractive ladies and lots of sex. And I approve.
This one is the lead in to the next one. This is $10. What do you think of this one?
100% worth it. This is probably one of the better adult visual novels I've just played in general, content wise.
Azzy, and again, that leads to Monster City, a monster college story developed and published by Monster Eye Games. Oh, I get it. Monster Eye, like a penis.
Yes.
I fucking get it. Released June 17th on Steam for $12.99. Set in the same universe as Monster College, this spinoff features a young vampire struggling with her family problems, curses, and atypical powers. Join him as he attends college and meets sexy new girls, each with their own peculiarities. They like that word, don't they?
Yes, they do.
It is a unique word, isn't it?
No, quit it. Quit it.
To talk about the
hurt you
unique features of each of the
you're gonna get hurt. You
monsters involved. Okay, what's going on in Monster City?
Okay, so this one, you play as a different guy in this, a young man who is a vampire, but doesn't have any of the benefits of being a vampire, because he was born without any powers, which is like a grave sin among vampires. You're basically a useless human in their minds, and they do not like humans.
And you're going again to Silverleaf University, actually. So you're going to the same school in hopes of making some friends, only to find out that the two people who have treated you like shit, your two aunts that have been mistreating you literally your entire life, one of them is now the principal of the school, and another one is a teacher, and a lot of the teachers are very already anti you because those two hate you and they're two of the most powerful people in the school.
Yay! Life's so good. Yeah.
Yeah, you end up going there, and this game can end up being played two different ways. You can play it as a visual novel, where you will end up missing a lot of extra content in it, or you can play it as a adventure game, kind of I wouldn't necessarily say like a point and click, but like a dating sims more styled game where you get to see a map and you get to go to different places and interact with people in them if there's anyone there, so on and so forth. I chose to play it that way just because more content means more funds. And yeah, he comes into the school. He at least understands the society that they're from, unlike the werewolf from the first game. But he has kind of a mouth on him, and he really likes to drink, so he's kind of bad. And he immediately meets a bunch of other more or less misfits. There's a giant orc girl, yummy, who doesn't like to fight. And that is, like, the most heinous thing that an orc can think of, is not wanting to just brutalize others. There's a Yukiona named Fuyu, which is basically an undead ghost-like thing that if you come near it, it freezes everything around it. So it takes all the body heat and kills people, more or less, as well as a handful of others that are mostly undead in this one. Lots of the characters from the first game don't end up making an appearance in this. Rachel does, because she's your cousin, I think. They call each other brother and sister.
Do you hook up with your cousin?
Sadly, no. Huh. No, because she's still with Werewolf Boy from the first game. Yeah, but other than that, basically all the other characters from the first game are gone, including the principals from the first game is gone, obviously replaced with another lady. The new principal, at least, was in the first game. She was a teacher in the first game, and now she's a principal. But even, like, the librarian is different. You have to go and work to make a little bit of money, and you make next to nothing. It's terrible. You get monster points for learning about monster history by going to classes or by making yourself stronger by going to the gym that you can later on use to do special types of training to hopefully be able to survive an actual fight with someone who is a monster whilst you have no powers and things like that. It isn't finished yet. I believe it's at like an 8 point something, I believe.
Is this an early access release?
It is technically still in early access, yes. It's at 9.0, okay, as of the first. So it's pretty close to done, but it isn't quite finished yet. They are actively still developing it, so it's not an abandonware, thankfully. And yeah, this whole situation is mostly sitting around, you've mouthed off to someone in a human city that's close to the university about being a monster to a woman who's a cryptozoologist, and now she's obsessed with you, and humans aren't supposed to know you exist because that's deadly for both of you. So you have to deal with that situation. Again, you're helping the other misfits as well as trying to figure out why you don't have powers and unlocking powers for yourself through alternative means. And yeah, it's been really fun. I have actually reached the end of its content, and I am sad because I want to play more.
Yeah.
No, you can't. Yeah. Tough shit. It's 13 bucks. Should people play up to where you got for 13 bucks?
Oh, hell yes. 100%. You know, go get your orc girl. Yo, it's fantastic. Yes.
Go get your orc girl.
Mm-hmm.
Do I have to put Jacob's face on an orc girl?
Do not. I will hurt you. And I'm serious about that. I will hurt you. I love orc girls. Do not fuck with orc girls.
See, now he has to do it.
No.
Now he has to do it.
No, because I'm serious. I will be very upset.
Knowing that Aki would have to travel to you, that would be worth it in and of itself.
Would. Really would.
No, after she's done beating you up, you can hang out. No, because
I bring bricks.
I mean, I already put Jacob's face on a robot tonight, so...
That works. Yeah, that is the picture for the show.
Cool. Not as entertaining, though.
Speaking of, we are done with the show. Big thanks to Chris and Adam Rippon for coming on, hanging out with us, chatting. Big thanks to you two for taking care of the reviews and chatting about the video games. All that fun stuff. Music tonight. We're going to do take a break from the Christmas to do a special song. Our buddy George Norg hooked us up with a track from Vince DiCola and Friends from a live show a couple of years ago. This is going to be the Angry Birds Transformers medley.
Oh, robots in the
board.
Yeah. Be good.
Oh, did you ever end up doing that thing you talked about earlier that you're like, I'm announcing it at 10?
Oh, well, that wasn't like for the show announce at 10. I was just an embargo for 10.
Oh, nuts. I was like, oh, man, I can't wait to hear what this house is going to play out. Or like, I was like, maybe Adam's related to it in some way.
It's just, I don't even remember what game that, what was it that I sent that to you about? Let me scroll up. Kingdom's Return time. That's right. Kingdom's Return. Going to be a city building / RPG coming from Inti Creates. Going to be launching next year. Inti
Creates.
Yeah, looks pretty good. So.
I concur.
All right. Well, with that, we are done. Does anyone have any final words to wrap up the show?
8 hours of sleep every night is worth it, even if I myself never get it.
True.
Thank you so much.